This episode is brought to you by Sand Concepts. Smell your way to happiness with Sand Concepts. Sand Concepts is a fragrance house specializing in daily aromatherapy essentials to enhance and elevate your overall wellness. Their products include essential oil blends, diffusers, hand-poured candles, and sanitizers that are kept at pocket-friendly price. Their beautiful fragrance, Eclipse, Starlight, Twilight, and Moonlight, are sourced from France, and they are handcrafted by their in-house chemist that's bound to keep you feeling and smelling incredible all day. So what are you waiting for? Do go to www.scentconcepts.co to find out more. As we all know, not everyone who works in a sales job or being a coach enjoys selling. I know that might come as a shock, but it's true. In fact, I would estimate that at least 20% or more of coaches and entrepreneurs don't enjoy selling. Their reasons can vary, but most often it's the result of not enjoying the process or feeling that selling is uncomfortable. The truth is that selling is helping. Well, if you want to make more sales with less effort, then this episode is for you. Hi, my name is Rayson Chu, and I'm your host for The Legacy Show. And tonight, is really our honor and pleasure to have invited this sales messaging strategist. Her name is none other than Rebecca. And Rebecca is a sales consultant serving entrepreneurs by helping them get clear on their sales messaging. By doing so, they can make more sales with less effort simply based on how they talk about their offers. She has helped entrepreneurs across industries from tech to coaches close sales just by communicating more clearly on their offers and outcomes. She has recently set up a membership for women entrepreneurs specifically and will soon release on offer structure, pricing strategy, and sales messaging designed to help people gain quick and impactful results in their business. Well, without further ado, let's welcome Rebecca into the podcast. Woohoo! All right, Rebecca. Welcome.
Thank you so much. That was a beautiful introduction. I'm not sure I've ever been introduced so well. Thank you.
Oh, wow. Thank you. Thank you. It's really my honor to have you here. And huge shout out to Paul Gatter for introducing us. It's really blessed to know a friend of mine who is recommending his friends, his students, and all to our podcast as well. And Rebecca, how have you been?
I've been great. I have been great. I live in Rwanda, as I told you before, and today is just such a beautiful day. And you might be hearing the birds chirping in the background as we speak. So, yeah, I'm doing very well. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing well as well. I'm really excited to have you here tonight for the podcast. And I've been really busy with the podcast as well. We have tremendous amount of amazing guests, including Paul Gatter. Way back when he was here, he was massively adding value to all of us, and I'm pretty sure tonight you will be adding a lot of golden nuggets with us as well. And you're most welcome. And Rebecca, can you share with the audience a little bit more about who you are and what you do?
Yes. So my name is Rebecca Hansen, and I am as you mentioned, a sales messaging strategist. So what I do is that I help people get more clear on the transformation that they can help to in a way that connects with their ideal audience, which in that sense makes them want to buy. And I really like the thing that you pointed out in the beginning about a lot of people don't like sales, and it's very true. But the thing is, we have an idea of what sales has to be. And I don't support the traditional approach to sales where you're trying to kind of force people to buy what it is that you have. For me, it's way more about getting really, really clear on what can you help your people with? Who are you helping? Get into conversations with people that you believe you can help. explain to them how you can help them, and then let them know what kind of offers are available, if there's synergy, if there's an interest. And if these people are not interested in buying from you, well, that's fine. You just move on to the next one and maybe leave them with a piece of value that they can use, even if they're not buying from you. So, and my approach is to just create as much value as possible and then get really, really clear on what that means for you and for your audience. So that's kind of, yeah, that's those are the things that I work with.
Nice. So I'm pretty sure, like, what I've read on your profile beforehand as well, I also know that you've helped people from the tech industry and even coaches, entrepreneurs to actually get their sales going and improved on their sales outcome as well, which we will talk a lot about it later on. And Rebecca, before we dive into the main focus of our interview, we would love to get to know you a bit better. So can you tell us a bit more about your backstory on how did you become a sales messaging strategist?
Yeah, it's funny actually, because it took me a long time to figure out whether that was what I was supposed to be doing. And I started getting into the coaching space mostly during COVID, because I was bored. There was nothing to do. So I just started taking a whole bunch of coaching certificates. I realized I had moved to Rwanda a year or two before that, and I would still have people from Denmark, where I'm originally from, call me for advice about things where I thought, couldn't you just have asked people who was around you? Why are you still calling me? But that's also when I realized maybe I have something, you know, maybe there's something about me and the way that I help people that I could apply to more people. So I started taking coaching certificates, and it didn't really sit well with me. I got some certificates in life coaching, health coaching, wellness coaching, and these kind of things. And it was like, it wasn't really sitting right with me. And then I met, I was introduced to Myron Golden. I don't know if you know who that is, but yeah, he's in a whole different league. And I started learning from him, and that's when I realized, okay, I want to have a whole different approach to coaching and to consulting in general. But then I also started thinking more about, okay, what are the results I want to help people achieve? And I did so many different things. I helped women with confidence building. I helped on mindset around build like healthy habits. So about like diet and exercise, how do you build the mindset that you need to have consistent results? I did helping coaches how to build coaching programs. And I did so many different things. And the funny thing is, the sales part has always been there. I just didn't realize that it was sales related. And the thing is, very often when we take for granted what we're really good at, what comes to us naturally, because we assume that everybody is good at it. And I had so many signs that I had to do sales. Like I had to do a personality test a while back, and they told me like, okay, your number one strength is persuasion. I was like, who would, what do, this is like, this test is wrong. I don't persuade anybody. And then when I told friends and colleagues and family about it, they would all be like, yeah, we could have told you that. there are a lot of signs that you need to do something which is around argumentation, getting clear in things, persuasion. And I actually, my greatest story, which is my client who made almost $500,000 in one session with me. Wow. I helped him gain those results before I even got into being in sales. I just knew that he had a problem, and I said, you know what, I can help you. And I took him through a session. I helped him get clear on his messaging. And even after he told me, I closed the sale. It was a government contract, so I knew it was a big contract. Even after that, I didn't even think this is what I should be doing. And even after, like, it took me months to ask him, so how much did you really make? And he was like, at least $450,000, if not more. And then I thought, that's amazing. And I told my mentor, my coaches about it, and they looked at me like, what are you doing? Why are you not, why, how many signs do you need? start doing
Wow.
this. And then I started getting into it. I started, okay, let's do this. And I started testing some things out. I did like a 5-minute video, and these are the typical mistakes that you people in this group that you often make, and this is what you should do instead. And I woke up to a text message the next morning from someone who said, I did some of what you said in that video, and within an hour, I had two people reach out and wanted to buy stuff from me, or they were interested in more. So I
Wow.
just got a lot of evidence that, okay, I'm now getting on the right track. So yeah, that's pretty much how I got into messaging.
Nice. Just wondering, what were you doing before this sales messaging, before being a coach?
Before being a coach, so I have done so many things. I took my bachelor's in business, Asian language and culture. I studied Mandarin at business school in Copenhagen. Then I got
Wow.
into a master's in international marketing and management. Then I got into telecommunications. My first job was with the Huawei in
China
Copenhagen.
or
In,
Copenhagen?
no, in
Okay.
Copenhagen, but I did have a lot of Chinese colleagues, so I got to practice my Mandarin. I was there for 4 years. Then I went to a bank and worked there. I worked in a department where I was purchasing market data for the stock from the stock exchanges around the world. And then, a lot of different departments in the bank need market data. So that was what I was doing. And it was a great stable job. It's good salary, great pension, great benefits, 7 weeks of vacation per year. Like, there's so many great things about being in this organization. But it just didn't speak to me. And I felt like I did not have any impact. And during my time there, I realized having a positive impact on something, whether it's people, whether it's the planet, whether there's, I want something that has impact. And one day I quit my job and I packed my bags and I moved to Rwanda and volunteered for a couple of months until I found a job. And then I found a job in a charity where I was helping young people into positive outcomes, such as setting up businesses, and getting into jobs. So yeah, I've done a lot of different stuff.
Oh, nice.
And then
Wow.
I actually also I do some work for Myron Golden as well, so I am on his payroll.
Okay. Cool. Wow. I mean, like, it's really a wonderful and still, I would say, adventure, kind of adventurous, kind of impressive journey that you have. I mean, like, meeting different people, getting to speak Mandarin. Well, I wonder, are you still able to speak Mandarin in very fluently right now?
我已经大多忘了，我会
Holy
说点
crap!
点中文。
Oh, nice! Wow! Salute, salute! Nice! 谢谢你，谢谢你！哇
谢
，it's
谢。
Wow, nice. Okay, cool. Wow, really amazing to have, somebody who can of a different culture, different continent to speak Mandarin as well. It's really amazing. And of course, our interview is not about Mandarin and all today, but it's more about you and your specialty, which is on sales. But before we actually go into that, I would like to ask you, I'm pretty sure while you're building your business up, you would have met some failures, made some mistakes, right? So, do you have a favorite failure of yours, and how has that failure or apparent failure set you up for later success?
So I think it depends how you consider failure. I think a lot of people looking at me from the outside would think I have done a ton of failures. Whereas for me, I don't consider them failures because
Okay.
I tried something out, it didn't work, and then I did something else, right? For me, that's just the part of life. I think getting into corporate and realizing how hard it is to work on things you're not passionate about is definitely, like, I just ended up having such a strong drive to do something that I am passionate about because I saw that it was possible. I saw that it was possible to have a something that you do with your life that you want to wake up and do even more. And I think so many people are just stuck in a job that they do because they feel like they have to. They feel like there are no other options. They feel like there's they're just following the guidelines that have been given to us, that this is how you're supposed to live life. You're supposed to go to your job from 9 to 5, or in Huawei, obviously that was more like from 8 to 8, or
Wow. Okay.
and for the Chinese consultants who were there, it was even longer, right? There was a lot of work. It was also fun. I mean, it wasn't that I didn't like it at all. We did some huge projects, and I kind of liked the whole drive about running for things and getting things done. But on the other hand, it was also something that I felt like, okay, this is better than something that wouldn't be as fun. But then I started to realize there's a difference between doing something because you kind of feel like you have to, and then doing something because you just absolutely love it. So getting into the space of helping people, I feel like I indirectly help the world become a better place because I help people who make the world a better place close more sales. So
yeah, technically, yes.
Yeah, I feel like my impact is almost infinite because I work very specifically with purpose-driven entrepreneurs. So if you don't feel like you have a purpose in what you do, it's very hard for me to teach you how to sell it. Because if there's not a passion there, if there's not a drive to, if there's not a drive to do better and serve your people, then I'm not sure I can really help you, you know? So.
Right.
When I work with people who are passionate about helping the people that they serve, then it's like a ripple effect, right? I see all the rings in the water spreading out. And in that sense, I feel like I have almost infinite reach of impact because that's such a beautiful thing. And I would have never experienced that if I hadn't given up on the corporate career. I spent 5 years in corporate. And a lot of people would say, you're quitting your job to go volunteer someplace. What are you doing? And I think a lot of people would have seen that as failure because I gave up. But I just gained so much. I gained so much from doing that.
I agree. And not just gain a lot of experiences, but you also gain a husband or a boyfriend over at Rhonda, if I'm not mistaken. I remember reading it on your website about it as well. And
I didn't even remember I put it there.
Yeah, I think I saw it there or somewhere else, but I remember, yeah. it's true that, probably people will find that, oh, you're giving up your job, that you're going to have a pension, you're supposed to have a really good income every month, but then you chose the other route, which is to volunteer, and people might think that, hey, you must be crazy, are you Mother Teresa or something? But then you realize that, oh no, I'm actually doing something else. You found somewhere, you have a whole new beginning. You didn't give up. Probably you gave up the past in a sense, but you found something more meaningful and more purposeful, and that's where you actually found your mission, and that's how it led you to Myron Golden. And now that's how you actually help so many people. And Myron also helped you out in a sense to realize what you have to do and need to do, right? So shout out to Myron Golden. Hope he listens to this episode as well.
Definitely. He is the most incredible mentor that you could ever want. He is just, he's amazing. I owe probably everything that I've achieved to him. So,
awesome. And speaking of mentors, right, I'm pretty sure you have met many mentors besides Myron Golden, probably when you're at Huawei or when you are outside other places of work, or even when you're doing your charity work as well. Can you share with us, what's the best piece of advice you've ever received from your mentors?
It kind of depends in what field we are talking, but one of my absolute favorite quotes is from Myron Golden, obviously, where he says, if you're the best, no one expects you to be the cheapest, but if you're the cheapest, no one will believe that you're the best.
Yes.
Yeah. And one of the reasons that, yes, and I bring this up very often because I work with a lot of women entrepreneurs, and women especially have a tendency to underprice their services. And that is tied to many things, but one thing being that women are expected to do so much unpaid labor, right? It's just part of societal dynamic. It's just how we grow up. There's so many people who are entitled to our time, and then coming out and saying, hey, now I'm going to start charging for my time. And it's not only going to be not cheap, it's going to be expensive, right? Because I'm worth that money. They want to undercharge so much. So when I come out and say, you know, people are not going to believe that what you have is worth anything if you're cheap. You know, they're not going to think that you're very good. You're going to have to charge a lot of money. You're going to have to at least charge what is a stretch for your ideal audience. Because first of all, that's when they start respecting your advice. You know, I don't know if you've ever done any of these free courses, but sometimes it's like, I forget that I have them, that I have access to them. Like, it's, I very rarely do them, to be honest. But if I pay $5,000-$10,000 for something, I'm going to do that course.
Yeah.
And I'm going to make sure that I implement it. And if it's even more money, you're going to be showing up. You're going to be there. Like, so whatever is a stretch for your ideal audience is where you should be charging your fees, simply because that's what gets them to do the things that they got to do, so that they can achieve the results that you're helping them achieve.
True, true, totally. And be it you are women or men, you got to charge based on your value, which we will be talking about it later on as well. And I totally agree with you that if you are the best, you are not going to be the cheapest. If you are the cheapest, you ain't going to be the best. So true, so true.
Yeah. And, people are not going to believe that you're the best.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure that, you know, when you are charging cheap, people will view you as probably mediocre, or even the worst ever, in a sense. So I totally agree with you on that. And Rebecca, I would like to ask you, right, you know, I'm pretty sure while you were actually growing your business and all, you would have read or listened to some audiobooks or even books themselves as well. So can you tell us, like, what are 1 to 3 sales books that have greatly influenced your life?
I think one sales book that I absolutely love is called Flip the Script by Oren Clough. That is more in terms of like technical things that you can implement in order to improve your sales from your side. But honestly, when it comes to sales, the most important things that you can do is figure out what value do you bring to the table? What kind of transformation can you bring to your clients? And who are your clients, and how do they, like, what do they talk about? How what is their language like? What are their pains and their desires and everything in surrounding that? Because once you can start speaking their language, that's when they can start connecting with you. So I would suggest that even though, sales books are great, once you already have decent sales, right? Sales books are great to help you kind of refine. But if you're in a place where your sales is not even close to that, instead of reading sales books, figure out who you are, what your value is, figure out who your audience are. And one of the best ways to figure out, get insights to your audience, is literally talking to them. I think you'll be surprised to know how many entrepreneurs assume they know their audience, but they don't. And the easiest thing that they can do is just talk to their audience. They can literally just jump on a, like, reach out to some people and say, hey, I would love to know more about you. Can we set up a call? And then I'll give you like a free session or something, you know, or I'll give you some like this book or something. Just talk to your audience and figure out what are their pains, what are their desires, what are their struggles, how can you help them? What is the solution that they want? It's so easy for us to come and say, hey, I want to give you this, but if people don't want it, then what it's not worth anything, right? It's only worth as much as people want it. So
right.
When it comes to sales, I would say those are actually the key things that you have to figure out. So whatever that means to you, wherever you are there, first figure out yourself, figure out what value you're bringing. So at least you know what kind of niche that you're looking at, and then talk to your audience, and then start reading sales books. Further
yeah,
down the
yeah.
Line.
True, true. I mean, like if you don't know who you are, what you want, who you're going to serve, then reading all those books will only just give you, you know, knowledge dump, right? You'll just be dumping all this knowledge inside you, and you're not gonna manifest anything by practicing on any of those skill sets that were being taught, being preached from that book itself. But if you were to actually know more about yourself and you are able to share it out with the audience that you want to target, and then practice from that book that you have been reading, then all the more, all the outcome that you want will slowly and eventually will come to you, in a sense. Am I right to say that?
Yeah.
Okay. I understand. Okay, cool. And Rebecca, just want to ask you, if you could actually go back to when you first started, what advice would you give yourself?
Jump in quicker. Both feet. Get out there and do stuff. Because honestly, not until we start getting responses from our audience will we know if we're on the right track. And I spent so much time just sitting and trying to think my way to what I wanted, and to think my way to this is what I want to do for people. And until you get the experience of actually communicating with your audience, providing value to your audience, I believe that our purpose is based in where we provide the highest levels of value. And I believe that we spend our entire lives figuring out where do we provide the highest levels of value. And then it's a journey finding our purpose. People want to sit at home and then meditate about what is my purpose in life. I see so many people asking on social media and everywhere, how do I figure out what my assignment is? How do I figure out what my purpose is? I've been praying for 20 years. It's like, you shouldn't be praying. You should be doing. Okay, pray,
yeah,
sure. But don't only pray, right? Get
right.
out there. Get that experience. Figure out, okay, if I do this thing with these people, are they getting results? Is this something I feel passionate about? And as soon as you start really helping people roll the ball and get traction and you see transformation in them, that's when you also start getting that feeling of fulfillment, like, okay, I'm doing something here, right? I'm on the right track to something. I spent so much time trying to think my way to my purpose, and it just doesn't work that way. So yeah, that would definitely be my advice. Get out there quicker, faster, jump into it.
Okay, right. I agree with you on that. We got to jump quicker and faster. And of course, there's always this saying that fail fast, fail forward, in a sense, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Well, thanks for all these golden nuggets that you've dropped, all the massive value bombs that you've dropped so far. And Rebecca, now to the main focus of our interview, I'd like to ask you, what's one thing every salesperson, be it their entrepreneur, their coach, they're in sales, what do they need to understand? What's one thing that they have to understand?
One thing. That's a hard one. I think, obviously, it's the audience. They need to understand their audience, their, as I mentioned even before, their pains, their desires, and their language. What is it that your audience wants? And the thing is, I mean, we can get into some technical stuff about awareness levels and how aware are they. Are they aware of the pain that they're in, the problem that they're in? Are they aware of the payoff that they want? Are they aware of the solution that they want? Are they aware that they want to work with you, right? For each of these, there's different types of messaging that you want to put out there. But if you speak in a language, and I see this actually very typical, you've mentioned both techs, people in tech and people who are coaches, and very commonly they make the same mistake, which is they speak a language that their audience does not speak. And we tend to be so ingrained, like deep, head first dived into our stuff. We're so deep in our stuff. And we have all of this language about what we do and how we do it, that when we talk about it, we think that people understand it. But if you're new to that element, if you're new to that area, you don't have that vocabulary, or you might have the vocabulary, but you don't necessarily, you might associate some of the words with different things. So one thing that I taught the client who ended up making almost $500,000, I was like, drop the tech language, all of it. And he's a techie, so that was hard, right? layman terms, help them visualize, what is it gonna look like? Help them picture, what is it gonna look like when your solution is in place? And then help them picture, what is the situation gonna look like if they don't get your solution? And then put those two up against each other. And then make sure that obviously when you're talking about the with the scenario without your solution, that would be an undesirable one, right? So you can kind of use both picture languages, but also words that trigger emotion to really get them understand, ah, that's not a desirable situation. And then you have, okay, this is the situation if you have my solution in place. And that's the dream outcome, right? So if you don't know how to talk about the pains and the problems, and you don't know how to talk about the dream outcomes, it's very difficult to make that juxtaposing of the two scenarios. But also, he is so tech that he's just used to sitting there and talking about, oh, we're gonna have all of these and then technical solutions. And if you're not a tech person, you don't understand any of that at all. And he was just, when you talk about the technical solution, what you're doing is that you're talking about the product in itself, but not the outcome that the product brings. And very rarely is the product, the tool that we use is very, it's usually not very interesting. What we're interested in is, what is life gonna look like once the solution is in place? What you're selling is the outcome. It's not the process, the tool, the product in itself. So using language that your audience would use, using literally the same words that your audience would use where they are now, instead of using the audience that you do because you already have the solution in place. Yeah, so if you think about many coaches, especially also, many coaches, they teach something that they have already overcome. They're selling a transformation that they've achieved themselves, right? So let's say I used to have a horrible mindset, then I got an amazing mindset, and now I sell mindset transformations. Mm-hmm. But once you've had a mindset shift, you see the value of it. You can reflect back and say, wow, my mindset was such trash back then. And now it's so much better. And I feel so much better, and it's amazing. And everyone should have that shift. But before the shift, you would have never sat down and thought, I need a mindset shift, right? Because at that point, it's like, okay, everybody else is the problem but me. I have no control over my own situation. I have to do all of these things that other people push me to do. I'm trying to set boundaries and people are not listening to me. Whatever it is, it's very often other people's faults. So if you come and tell them you need a mindset shift, you're like, no, you don't understand. None of this is my problem. None of this is my fault. So if you're talking to them in a way that they would only understand if they've already achieved the transformation, then the only people that you're going to get any responses from are the people who've already achieved the transformation. And those are not your audience, because they don't need you, right? Yeah. I see it so often. You have coaches on Instagram, on social media, and they're posting content, and it's fully aligned with a post-transformational language. And everyone you have on commenting are other coaches who do the same thing. Like, yeah, this is so true. And there's nobody from your ideal audience, because they don't even, like, they're not even in that space. They don't even understand really what it is that you're talking about. So you have to regress back to the old language that your client is using now that you used to use. Because only when you do that will you be able to capture them where they are and not where you are, right?
Yeah, right. I agree. It makes sense. Like, we have to talk about their pain points more than the result right now, because the result can be during a discovery call. Then we can talk about more about the results that we can give to them. But right now, we got to talk more about the pain points that they have. If correct me if I'm wrong. So Like, for example, you mentioned about, you know, talking about the part where they were at the moment of time rather than where we are at a point of time. So that's why we have to talk more about, oh, they are lacking of money. So we talk more about, oh, how this person is lacking money and all those other stuff. And then after that, we have a call with that person, and then poop, we talk about, oh, so you are lacking of money. Okay, this is how we can do it by A, B, and C, for example, right?
Yeah, so I think you can still talk about the results, but you have to do it in a way that they understand the results. So if, for example, if you are a coach that helps people get money, there's a lot of money mindset, mind trash in the world, right? Most people are like, no, it's not possible for me. You're just selling this impossible dream. So what you would probably do there is say, here's my client who was in this situation, and they thought that it was completely impossible for them to ever achieve these outcomes, and here they are in their new Rolls Royce or something like that, right? So
right.
Helping people believe that it's possible, especially when it comes to people that work with money and money mindset and money results, getting people to trust that it's not a scam, that it's not like you're just trying to trick me out of my money, that it's not you're selling me some pipe dream, that is actually possible, right? That is what you really probably should be one of your biggest focuses when you're working with money. But when I'm talking about the transformation and the language that you use, you can sell the dream 100%, but you have to do it in a way that your old self or the people where they are now, that they understand that dream. So it's so easy for some people to come out and be like, hey, I'm just flying around the world, I'm just flying private jets, and now I got this perfect body, and now I have this perfect marriage, and I have this perfect whatever. A lot of people are going to look at that and say, but that's not applicable to me. I'm not able to achieve these results because my situation is different. So, and if that's a common objection that your audience has, then it's about showing, no, it's actually very possible for you if you do X, Y, Z. And if you have these little nuggets that you can help people with, that can get the audience little results through those little three pieces of information, then you build trust, right? Then people are going to say, oh, actually, she said that I should do this, and it totally worked. Now I'm going to sign up for a lead magnet. Now I'm going to sign up for her pre-recorded course. Now I want to sign up for a mastermind, you know? So, yeah, I can talk about messaging for hours.
Yeah, I agree. And you also have an upcoming webinar as well, which we'll be talking about it later on as well, which falls on the last week of May. And yeah, but before we jump onto that, I would like to ask you, what are the three biggest mistakes that destroy sales? Because I saw this on your YouTube channel the other day, and I felt that this is really interesting, so I thought we could actually share more about this on the podcast episode as well.
Yeah, sure. Well, the first one, we've already been through that, because that is that you use language that your audience doesn't understand. That is going to kill a sale immediately. And in that, I have another quote from Myron Golden. He says, we all have the same dictionary, and we all have the same vocabulary, but we don't have the same dictionary. Which means that if I say a word like mindset, what I believe that that means to me might not be the same that that means to you. We might have two different ideas about what does mindset mean. And especially coaches have tendencies to use very fluffy language. We use stuff like authority and flourishing and thrive, and which are, yeah, they're all great words, but they're not very clear. So using language that's very clear can be misunderstood. We all mean the same things, right? It's like pen and paper. We know what that is. We know what the function is. We know how it works. It would be in your case, if you're talking about wealth coaches, it is get 50K months within 90 days or something like that. You know, it's very specific. You can't really misunderstand what that is. So that is definitely the first one. Second one is about, did you have a comment on that before I move on?
No comment on that.
The second one is about focusing on the tool and the vehicle instead of on the result. So if you, as I mentioned with my client, he kept talking about the product in itself. But let's say the product is a car. The car in itself is not what you're buying. You're buying the experience that the car brings. You're buying the status, maybe. If it's an expensive car, you're buying the status that that brings. You're buying, if it's like a van, you're buying the opportunity to go places with more stuff with you, you know? So depending on what it is that you're really selling, there's going to be the outcome of getting that purchase. Like it's about the destination. It's not about the vehicle in itself, right?
Mm-hmm.
And right. The last one is that entrepreneurs very often have a tendency to talk more about themselves than what they can do for people. And
true.
That means, you know, and if someone knows you already really well, so for me, for example, I love hear about Myron. Myron, he can talk about himself all the time. I'm going to sit there. I'm going to listen because I'm already a fan, right?
Right.
If you are not already a person who already has a huge audience, then most likely they're not going to care so much about you. And I know it sounds really rough, but make it more about the people that you serve. Talk about the people that you serve. Talk about the clients that you've helped. Help people understand what you can do for them, not just about what you do in itself. Yeah.
Right. I mean, like, if you keep talking about yourself, then people might see you as really egotistical and they might not even like you after that, right?
Yeah, and it's kind of boring hearing someone you don't really know, you don't really care that much about, just talking a lot about themselves. It's way more interesting to hear, what can you do for someone? Who do you help? What can you do for them? What are things that you can do to help other people? What are things you've already done to help other people? This is way more interesting, because then if you tell me about that, I'm going to start visualizing, this is how my life might look like if you helped me do these things.
True. Okay, cool. And Rebecca, just wondering, what's the biggest challenge you think business owners face in terms of sales?
I think it is talking about the things that you have to offer. And I see this especially as entrepreneurs and especially as smaller, like entrepreneurs with smaller teams or even solo entrepreneurs are so terrified of talking about their offers because they feel like they're overstepping. They feel like, oh, people are going to hate when I'm talking about my offers. But the thing is, if you have something that can help someone else, to me, you have a moral obligation to sell it. If you can help someone and you're not telling them about how you can help them, you're not doing them a favor. You're doing them a disservice.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that I keep telling them is, put yourself out there, talk about your offers, let people know how they can work with you. There are so many entrepreneurs out there who come and say, I'm never making any sales. And then I go and I look at their, you know, their social media and I was like, but what are you selling? You're not making any offers. It's not clear for anyone. If I can't figure out what you're selling, then your audience definitely can't figure out what you're selling. And if you can help someone achieve a transformation that improves their lives, who are you to not tell them about it? You know, you have an obligation to tell people that you can help them. Obviously, if you can't help them and if what you're selling is crap, then by no means stop selling it. But I think that's the biggest problem that many entrepreneurs have, is that they're holding themselves back from talking about it.
Yeah, totally. And that's why, like what you mentioned earlier, they got to, you know, go and practice on selling, and they have to talk about it. They have to learn about the audience first before they read all those sales books or attend any of these courses. In a sense, like they have to understand themselves, their product, their services, go out there and master the skill set by practicing on people, right? In the sense where they are going to be the guinea pig for them to practice on. So I agree with
and
you on that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Totally. Once they are more comfortable with it, they are already like a master in that topic, which like you yourself, you are really comfortable in sales. That's why you're able to do this podcast episode and share so many ton of amazing wisdom and golden nuggets with us as well. And, you know, being an entrepreneur, like what you mentioned, being a coach, an entrepreneur, they are really not so comfortable with all this kind of prices sometimes, which we talked about earlier as well, right? So I would like to ask you, how do you price your products or services correctly and be profitable?
Mm-hmm. Well, it really depends what you do. It depends, obviously, what is involved with your expenses. If you're selling a physical product, you're going to have to consider that physical product and then also your margin and all the expenses that go into that physical product before you can even start setting a price. Also, if you have a physical product, you probably have to look at what are my competitors selling, because you can very quickly get commoditized through that. But if you're selling knowledge, if you're selling information products, if you're selling consultancy, if you're selling these type of things, it's way easier to get profitable. Especially once you get started, because you might not have your own team, right? So your expenses that you have on the different softwares that you need in order to actually implement your product. But when it comes to pricing, it comes way more down to what would make you happy getting up for in the morning. So many people, they undercharge and they run themselves dry on one-to-one calls, and then they have like 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 calls in a day. I want to do that. And just running themselves dry. And the thing is, if you keep running yourself dry just to make ends meet, you're not doing your audience a favor, because you're not going to be able to be fully present when you're there. So figure out what would make you happy. Second thing, figure out what is the value. Place a monetary value on what you can help your audience achieve. So let's say you're a wealth coach. I can help mm-hmm. you make an additional $100,000 in a month. Will then charge 10% of that. Because right. if you can help someone make $100,000 in a year, then charging $10,000 is a reasonable price. First of all, as we spoke about earlier, if you charge $500 and you say, I can help you make $100,000 in a year, people are not going to trust that you can help them make $100,000 in a year. Right? If you say you're going to pay me $10,000 and you're going to get $100,000 out of it, it seems like a pretty good deal, right? Okay, I pay $10,000 and then I get a 10 times my money back through if I'm able to do this. So there's also some things about, you know, you can't really make guarantees in these things. What you can guarantee is I'm going to teach you the principles that have helped other people make $100,000 in a year. I can guarantee you that. I can't guarantee you that you're going to make $100,000 in a year, because that depends on whether or not you actually do the things that I tell you to do. So, yeah, that's one pricing strategy. A lot of people, they don't have a product or service or solution in place that help people gain $100,000. Like, it's not that easy, right? They might be teaching relationship coaching or health coaching. Then you can start asking, okay, if I help you get healthy, what is the price of heart surgery that you're going to avoid, right? It's a whole lot cheaper to stay healthy than it is to have heart surgery in most countries. Right. If you're in relationship coaching, you know, divorce is really expensive. That's going to cost you half of everything you got. I'm just going to charge $10,000. I'm going to save your marriage.
this is a hot one. This is a nice one. Okay.
It's about positioning your prices. So you need to give people something to compare to. If you just come out and say, hey, this is my offer, it's $5,000, but you haven't compared it to anything, other people are going to, the people that you're giving that price to are going to compare it themselves, and they're going to compare it to something that's not in your favor. So you would want to anchor your prices to something that is way more expensive, depending on, okay, this is what you're going to end up paying if you don't solve this problem. Or this is what you're going to end up having if you let me help you achieve these results. So it's also, it really depends on how experienced you are. If you're completely green, don't start out with a $10,000 offer simply because you don't have evidence that you actually know how to help people get results. You know, try out something first. Start out with some prices that stretch you as well. You need to be stretched in how you're charging, as well as your audience needs to be stretched in how they're paying. Because if not,
True.
you're just going to end up charging $300 for whatever for the rest of your life. We have to stretch ourselves as well and keep improving on what it is that we're delivering, always over delivering. Yeah, get better and better.
Yeah, totally agree with you on over delivering. And of course, does it mean that when you want to charge, you got to compare it with your peers and competitors first before you decide on the final charges that you want? For example, like if let's say Rebecca, you're selling your course at, for example, 3997, but your peers and competitors, some of them are charging at one, the others are charging at 10997. So how do we gauge, like, this is the range that we should be charging and not, you know, too low or too high for people who are green in their industry?
I mean, again, if you're green in the industry, it could be a good idea to just look at what other people are doing, just to kind of figure out where do you feel comfortable sitting. And I would also say buy some courses. I felt so much more comfortable charging thousands for my stuff once I had paid thousands to others, because I was like, oh, this is what they're getting. Oh, okay. So it's actually not unattainable for me to provide value to that extent. But I would say, I'm just going to leave a quote from, I believe it's Dan Kennedy, who said, there's no strategic advantage to being the second cheapest, but there is to being the most expensive. So when it comes to like comparing your prices to others, if you're green, sure, get like figure out where are you, where are other people, what are they doing? It's great. But if you're experienced in what you do, focus on the outcome that you can help people achieve, and then get really, really good at talking about that.
Okay,
And then anchor your
understand.
price to that instead.
Okay, cool. So for those of you who are tuning in, remember to actually practice on this, especially if you're green in the industry, all right? Okay, and wow, thank you so much for that, Rebecca. And I'd
You're
like to ask
welcome.
you, right? You know, when you are actually giving a pitch, you already know who are your audience, you already know how much you're going to price it, and now it's the game time where you're going to pitch it to someone, right? So how do you keep people from zoning out during your pitch?
Keep them engaged, talk to them, ask them questions. I ask people so many questions when I'm on a sales call. I want to know, I want to be sure that I want to work with that person, and I want to be sure that I can help that person. Now, obviously, if it's a cheaper price, if it's something like $1,000 or below or something like that, I wouldn't necessarily do sales calls. But if it's something that's higher priced, I want to make sure that I believe I can help that person. And if I don't think that I can help that person, I'm going to be honest and say, you know what? I just don't think that this is for you. Maybe this is the direction that you should be going to. If it's something that I believe that I can really help them, I'm going to explain to them how I believe that I can help them. I will explain to them, these are all the mistakes that I see you making. And this is why your audience is not connecting with you. And this is why you're not making the sales that you deserve because your product is great. I only work with people if I think their product is great. Not
Yeah,
I can't
true.
help you sell it. So it's yeah, it's an engagement. It's me learning about you. It's you learning about me. It's me learning about your solutions, what you have in place. It's me telling you these things are not going to work for you, and this would actually help you a lot. And if you want to work with me, I'll help you get specific on that. Right? We'll dive into the specifics of it, how you can take the language and how you can get clear on what you're doing. And the thing is also because we are so deep into what we do, it's really hard to figure out what do other people's understand and what do they not understand. So that's where I come in. I'm green to most people, right? I have no idea what all of these different products are, and especially if it's tech. A lot of people think I can't help them sell tech products because I don't understand the tech language. That is the perfect person to help you sell that product, because if I don't understand it, your audience for sure is not going to understand it. So For me, it's way more about that engagement. Now, if you're doing a pitch in a larger group setting, let's say you're doing a webinar
Right.
and you have an audience and you're delivering your pitch. First of all, I would suggest teach them something important after your pitch. A lot of people like to put their pitch at the end of a webinar, and it just gives a lot of people the opportunity to lock out and leave. What
Right.
I would do and what I've done is kind of just put my pitch in the middle and say, hey, I have this offer coming up, by the way. Do you mind if I speak about it for a few minutes? And that time before then, I have already warmed up the audience by talking about a lot of things that they would find valuable. And if they don't find it valuable, they would have left already by this time. Then I ask them, is it
Right.
okay to just talk to you about this new offer I have coming up? Mostly they'll just be like, sure. Then I tell them, this is what I'm doing, and this is why I'm doing it, and this is what it's going to look like, and this is what the price is, and here's the link. But before that, I will let them know, I'm just going to spend a few minutes on this, and afterwards, I'll tell you about how I helped my client close $500,000 in sales after just one session. I'll teach you the very specifics that I taught him. And people are going to be like, I want to hear that, right? I want to know what that is. So teach them something valuable after your pitch, if you're doing it in a webinar, is my suggestion. Make it low pressure. Don't make it feel like you need these people to buy. Don't make it feel like you're gonna have to buy this thing now. What I do is to say, okay, so this is what it looks like. This is what you're gonna be able to get from it. This is what it's gonna help you with. And if you're having these struggles, then it's gonna be perfect for you. And if you don't have these struggles, well, then probably this offer is not for you. So, that there's that. Make it very low pressure. It takes the pressure off you, it takes the pressure off them, makes the whole experience way more comfortable.
Right. I agree with you on that, because like many times when people sense you're desperate for money, all the more it will shoo them away in a sense. Desperation kills.
It
Desperation really
really
kills.
does. Yeah, it really does.
Okay. And I'd like to ask you, right, Rebecca, I'm not sure if you have ever encountered this before, but I'm pretty sure many coaches and entrepreneurs, they would have experienced this, and that is being ghosted by people that they find are really, really potential in be it investing in their company or buying their courses, for example, or probably buying their products and services, right? So how do you get someone to respond to you who is ghosting after you had a sales meeting?
So if you've given them an offer and they're ghosting you, just let them know when that offer expires. Just like kind of jump in and say, hey, I just wanted you to know that we have like the offer that I gave you is the price is going to increase next week. But if if I hear back from you before then it's still, it's still on. And if you have any questions, if you have any comments or concerns, just let me know. And if people don't like, we can't force people to buy. We can persuade them. We can kind of sway them in a specific direction.
Right.
But if they don't believe it's right for them, they're not going to buy. And if they don't believe it's right for them, and they could be right that it's not right for them, there's no reason for us to try and force it. So I say yes, follow up with people. If you send them a couple of kind of pings, just let them know, okay, this offer just ex it's going to expire next week by, Friday midnight or whatever. If you're still interested, I would love to hear from you. If you have questions, let me know. And if that's, I mean, if they still don't get back to you, let that bird fly. They're not for you. They'll come back at a later time if you have
True.
what they need.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I mean, if let's say you are actually being ghosted by someone, it might mean that they are not a fit with you for you as well. So it's best if you let them go, and then wait for them to come back to you. If they come back, great. If they don't, then you still have other people to actually target to in terms of your target audience. Right.
Yeah, because if you waste all this energy on people who are not buying, you could have spent that energy on someone who could potentially want to buy from you instead and who's ready to make that purchase. So don't spend too much, like follow up, yes. Don't waste too much energy on them because there's always going to be people who are nervous to say no to you in face, like face to face. And what they're going to do is just kind of like ghost you and run away afterwards. And We're just gonna have to accept that that's how it is sometimes.
True, true. Then Rebecca, if let's say someone is actually here right now who's tuning in, they are having some problem and some issues in their sales, for example, in terms of they're having a slowdown. Okay, so what would you say to someone who's seen a slowdown in their sales?
I would suggest that you gain momentum, whatever that means to you. For me, it is talking to people in my space. So that would be fellow women entrepreneurs, just having a chat with them and get back into that momentum. It would be talking to my audience. Sorry, my dogs just came in. It would be talking to my audience and just like being reminded of what I can do for them, being reminded that what I have to offer is actually really valuable. So it could be talking to previous clients and just saying, hi, how things are going. It can be talking to people from your ideal audience and just figuring out, doing some of these market research calls. And it can be just talking to people in your space. That for me builds momentum a lot. I get my energy lifted and I get inspired to things that I can do to kind of get the ball rolling a little bit. And yeah, so I think this momentum is so important.
Yes, momentum and consistency are the way to go for sales. I agree with you on that. And as we are coming to the end of the podcast, I have one last question for you, Rebecca, and that is this. Okay, imagine this, Rebecca. You suddenly lose everything, your money, your reputation, and even your assets. Okay, so what will you do from day one to day 30 to save yourself?
So, my biggest part would be get out there and provide as much value as possible. Because when you start providing value, that's when people realize you have something to provide that they want to work with. It also helps with getting referrals. So reach as many people do as like jump on podcasts, provide this kind of value. Go on lives, reach out to people, and just start giving stuff away. And honestly, just start by giving it away for free. Just start by talking to people and let people know that you're available for purchase, so to speak, that you have these offers in place. Let people know, hey, I'm doing this thing. It's going to look like this. It's going to do like that. Reach out to people in your network, people that you know, reach out to friends, family. I know that it can be so hard when you get started to tell your
Right.
friends and family, I'm gonna do this thing right now. And it's terrifying. But the thing is, you gotta rip the band-aid at some point. So might as well get it done. Might as well tell people I have this thing, share it, do like a Canva poster, share it, get it out there, and just do something that moves that needle every single day. Even if you can't every single hour that you're awake and moving. It's just talk about it, share it. Let people know what value you have to create. Yeah, that would be my go-to.
Awesome, awesome. Okay, cool. Wow, thank you so much, Rebecca, for so many ton of value that you've added for not just me, but also the audience that's tuning in right now. Really appreciate you, and thank you so much for appearing on the podcast as well. And where can my audience find you? And especially not forgetting the webinar that you're having in the following week.
Yes. So on the 24th of May, I'm going to do a webinar and it's free. Just come jump in and have fun. You can reach me at I am Rebecca Hansen. Just out in one on Instagram. I am, and then REBECCAHANSEN. So that's my handle. You can just DM me whatever questions you have. I'll send you the link if you want it to sign up. I also have a May only offer where I do my May magic session for at 20% of the original 25% of the original price. So it is in May only. If you have issues with your messaging, go ahead and reach out to me. Yeah.
Okay, awesome. So for those of you who are tuning in, her upcoming webinar is actually at rebecca-hanson.com open slash webinar dash sign dash up. Okay, so you can go and check that out And it's in the it's in the caption below, so you guys can actually check it out as well. Okay, so with that, I would like to thank each and every one of you for tuning in, and stay tuned for the next episode of the Legacy Show, which we're going to bring in the great David Meltzer onto the podcast. So if you guys are looking forward to that, just stay tuned, all right? And so for everyone, hope you guys going to have a great weekend, and see you guys real soon. Okay, take care and bye-bye.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Bye. Bye.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to another episode of The Legacy Show. I hope it has enlightened you. I hope it has brought you to an epiphany where you realize that this is where you want to go and this is what you want to do. So I hope you will continue to support and also at the same time like, comment and share this episode out to your people, to your family, your friends, and not forgetting that we have just created a Telegram group. It's called the Legacy Show Family, so you can go and check it out and let us know how you find this group is serving you. Alright, so with that, I would like to thank you once again, see you, and stay tuned for another episode of the Legacy Show.